The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! One of the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, jeez.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we're having our second go at recording the show, unfortunately.
Yeah, so we lost the original audio track, so apologies if when I exclaim in amazement at Nick's incredible research, it might not sound quite as fresh as it did the first time, but it's still sincerely felt.
Yeah, actually, so I was worried we needed something fresh, so I've got some more stuff, which the listeners know nothing about, so why don't we get into it?
Exactly. So, Nick, why don't you explain the concept of this show?
So, we don't have games from 2020 to podcast about, and so we thought we'd go back and podcast games from before we started podcasting. So we started the show in 2011, so we thought we'd start with a game from 2010. First year, Dimmer's first year in charge, it's round 10. It's fair to say the year's not going very well. We've lost our first 9 games. We're conceding 120 points per game, which is by far the worst in the AFL. We're being compared to Fitzroy. It's not going very well.
No, it's not.
Travelling to Port Adelaide. Port Adelaide are 5-4, sort of mid-table, where they've been for a while. Post the early zeros premiership, it's not looking promising.
No, it's not. And we're starting to. There's a few green shoots. After a very depressing start to the year, that where we were being regularly flogged by 10 goals. Not the week before, we'd had a supposedly honourable loss against Essendon, who are on their way to not make the finals again.
To finish third last.
Yes, and we lost by 35 points, and that was considered an improvement. We had the week before that, we'd had our only respectable game of the year where we'd lost to quite a good Hawthorn team by 2 points. So either that was the green shoots, or that was just the sort of the closest they're ever going to come to win. But certainly the mood was grim, and there was a gambling market, if you recall, Nick, for Richmond to go to not record a win for the entire season. So
yeah,
but I remember this game very well. We were still
good.
I remember sitting down watching it, still hope in my heart that we might somehow be able to get an upset. And it turned out pretty well, didn't it?
It did. So as a spoiler warning for all the shows that we do, Richmond's going to win every one. Like, this is... we are like Disney. The good guys always win. But it's a pretty extraordinary game. And so a couple of hours before game time, it essentially had a cloudburst on Amy Park in Adelaide, you know, the old football park. You know, the ground is covered in water.
Yeah, and you can see it, you know, famously when the cart goes through the ambulance cart goes through the water, it leaves the massive tracks, but as soon as the ball is bounced, there's huge puddles being thrown up by the players' boots. So you just know this is going to be a game of want rather than pure skill, but there are still moments of skill throughout the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and they're all sort of, they're more... And it's a very Stars and Scrubs Richmond team for those moments of skill. For people wanting to see it, it's on YouTube. Just pretty much you can search for Richmond Port Adelaide 2010. And when you look at the game, if you think, wow, there's a lot of tackling in this game. There's a lot of tackling. There's the second most number of tackles, Richmond records the second most number of tackles a team has ever recorded in the history of the AFL since they started doing their stats about 40 years ago. It's incredible.
It is, and like obviously the conditions favoured it, but what I really enjoyed about the game was it was a window back to an earlier time of Richmond. Is here was a scrappy team that was sort of reading in the press every week how terrible it was, and the sort of, you know, it was the downtrodden underdog Richmond that we spent so much of our youth supporting. Mm. But my God, this was a team that was hungry for a win. Like, there is no team more hungry for a win than a team that that's played 9 games in a row without winning.
I know.
And it's just, from the first moment, and this wide body number 36 screams into the contest and bashes in twice and gets the clearance. And I was thinking, who is that? I can't remember. And I don't remember Jerome Webberley wearing 36 or being that good at inside. And then, oh, it's young Dusty playing who wider of body, but just reminding you that if he wanted to play tank football, he'd actually be really good at it.
Yeah, so I actually understood the Dermot Brereton's famous prediction about Dusty that he'd turn into a wobbler. I understood it a waddler. I understood it a bit more after seeing him as a first-year player. Like he's a real inside bull. He's not really much of a target going forward. Like for the whole year, he kicks 10 goals, which it's a massive career low, except for 2016, where he was sweeping up in defensive 50 much of the time. And he's an inside ball. I think we've gone too long without talking about Shane Tuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Nick, it's so exciting. Like, this was a game made for Shane Tuck. And his very first touch, it summarizes his whole career. Shane Tuck wins a nice contested possession, and he kicks the ball without looking. And the commentators call it it's a blast kick into our forward line, which actually it was pure Shane Tuck. He had 31 touches and 14 tackles for the day. So you know, and it's the kind of game where manning up doesn't matter so much, more so than your ability to just hunt the football and hunt the man, which is all Shane Tuck ever did. So it was a game made in heaven for him.
Hmm. And actually the game kind of suited I think perhaps if Dimmer came in with visions of implementing a Hawthorn style system, the team's style of play, it just, I think, evolved very much over the course of the season. And two things they were good at were hacking the ball out of the middle forward, a pretty good centre clearance team with Tuck and Dusty, who are our two best clearance players, and hacking it forward to Jack, who won the Coleman. And it was a pretty simple formula.
Yeah, it was. Some would argue that you can see shadows of the 2017 game plan. You'd have to sort of forget about the 6 years in between where Dimmer played a complete, where we, on dry days, we played a completely different style. But, you know, it was, I actually think, like, maybe it's just because this game has stuck so strongly in my head, but I always thought Dimmer was good on wet days. He was good at coaching the players to change their game style. And, you know, I think this is quite, look, we very early on were playing to the conditions properly. Exactly as you say, hat kicks forward, make it a territory game. I think Chris Newman's sort of, guys like Chris Newman and Matty White, the way they sprint with little short little steps that accelerate is very good for wet days. You don't want to be a long strider in the wet. You want to have lots of contact with the ground. I just think it suited a lot of...
Lots of running in straight lines as well, I thought. I was really impressed with Matty White's game, and if he did nothing else, he ran in straight lines.
He did indeed. And, ran up and down. I sometimes wonder, I mean, he only had 13 touches, but they were just, he was covering space and hitting the contest hard. I sometimes wonder whether the games like this affected Port Adelaide's, rating of him as one of the reasons they signed him, because he was a very effective, 13 touch player in that game.
I want to talk about him, and there's him and one other player I want to ask you about. Could they get a game in the current team? And yeah, Matty White. I go back and forth. Like, you know, his stats are unimpressive, even in this game. But yeah, he runs in straight lines. He's super fast. Because they mentioned on the telecast about he'd won the grand final sprint a few years earlier. And I looked in 2008, he won the grand final sprint where he was the only person on handicap. He had a 2 meter handicap and he still won. Like, he was possibly the fastest player in the AFL, and sometimes that wasn't all that useful, but sometimes it was.
Yeah, look, I guess to that question is, you have to ask yourself, would he be better than Brandon Ellis or now Josh Caddy? Look,
yeah,
I'm not sure. So Brando, look, because that's the role he's played. Like, he's definitely. Of the three of them, Caddy's the best contested ball player and is the most versatile, but he's probably the worst runner and probably the slowest. So it's sort of...
Kicks more goals.
He wouldn't have been a 22-game player, but he might have won a premiership flag, if that makes sense.
Maybe Camden McIntosh is a possible comparison as well.
Yeah, or again, Camden McIntosh, better contested player, I think. I think Matty White's maybe the most likely of all those players to kick a nice long running goal off the wing. Which has value in itself, quite obviously. The other really interesting one, so we put that as a maybe. I really thought, is not old broken down Chris Newman, but young, still fast Chris Newman, would he get a game as well?
Oh yeah. No, I'm team Chris Newman.
So he beats out Jaden Short.
Yes. So he's, look, it's partly the quality of teammates, but he's both, he's second on the team for metres gained. He's got a really high retention rate from his kicks, so he's both kicking reasonably long, we're retaining possession from it, and he's second on the team in intercept marks as well, which you don't normally get from your 5'11" halfback flankers. I'm team Newman, and until he got very old and slow.
He also got. I think I'm really biased that the old and slow thing is what, and that they went and Cochin had the same thing. They went to a stage in their career where they were ultra defensive with the football. Like they would hit a teammate with the ball, but it was sort of blind alley kicking. Both of them got like that where they retained possession, but then you'd never score from it. So what I need to do is go back, which we will do in future episodes, and sort of look at younger Chris Newman when he can still break lines. Sort of look again at his prime, because I have too many memories of sideways 35 meter chips, in static play. So I need to reassess. But the point about the marking is well made, I think. And with no criticism of any of our existing smalls, he would be the best mark of all our small players other than Vlossy. I think that's fair. So he'd be a better mark than Bash, and obviously better than Short.
And Bash is not bad. I mean, we're probably overrating him just because he's had a couple of famous contests where he's halved contests against
Bash.
People like...
Yeah.
Like Tex. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
He's halved contests against people like Tex Walker in a grand final, so that...
And it's really bloody hard to objectively rate premiership heroes next to good players of another era.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to the Joel Bowden discussion in future episodes.
Yeah, me too. We've got a Joel Bowden game for next week, and yeah, really looking forward to it. Late great Creed Richo as well. But anyway, for this game, well, speaking of key forwards, what did you think of Jack?
Well, it was, so Jack's a few weeks away from his 10-goal game against West Coast, so that happens in 4 weeks' time, I think, after this game. So he's mercurial, he's the centre of the forward line, he's not surrounded by great talent. There are flashes...
Oh my God, so on that point... So he's targeted inside 50 more than any other player in the competition this year. He's targeted 189 times going inside forward 50. The next highest was Andrew Collins and Jaden Post targeted 18 times.
Oh, isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah, it was kick it to Jack, and with an army of misfit toys, small forwards around him, and I actually quite liked it. It's suited this game.
Yeah, and again, a little distant echo of 2017.
With less talent.
Yeah. Also, we were playing more traditional. We were trying to play Graham Pollack as a second ruck, big tall. This was post concussion Pollack, so he's earnest, but not particularly dynamic. And we're clearly trying to bring more bigs in because it's Griffo's debut.
So Ty Vickery's an emergency, but I think he'd possibly had a concussion the week before, so he's out of the team. So yeah, we've got five teenagers in the team with Dusty, Dave Asprey, Ben. Nathan, I don't think Wembley was a teenager, and Ben Griffiths on debut, and my, how Ben Griffiths he was.
It was the most Ben Griffiths-y game ever. One brilliant mark in the first quarter where you go, oh my God, he could be anything.
I know, he's tall, he's mobile, takes a big mark.
Yep.
Drops some chess marks.
Picks up. Five disposals. Gets injured.
Gets injured.
Afterwards on the fan forums, there's long discussions about, if only he got his confidence right, he could be anything. And the only thing he didn't do
Spoiler alert, he didn't.
We're not even sure how good punter he is. The only thing he didn't do was kick a 65 meter point. Anyway, it was nice. I mean, it was a beautiful mark. The lad could play. So on the other end of the on the expectations versus delivery scale is probably Dave Asprey, who sort of had the opposite career where you barely notice him except one solid mark, but. You know, he had 10 disposals, and he was already becoming quite reliable.
Yeah, yeah, and there was, and he was very down the line, Dave, in his kicking as well. So yeah, when you sort of knew what he was going to turn into, it actually made sense. I was struck by the whole, you're looking at, so you're ringing from the future, you're calling up 2010 Andy, and you're talking to him about, yeah, actually, it turns out really well. Like, people are debating whether or not we're a dynasty by the end of the decade, and you get to go to two winning grand finals, and they're as much fun as you'd expect. It's awesome. And so 2010, you would be like, really? Tell me more. So yeah, Dusty and Chimp, they're like two of our star players. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, surely I would have said, oh, really? So we finally cracked Tambling, did we? Like, how did we really get him producing? really pleased that Ben Nason turned out, worked out as the key as a small forward.
Did Lids get a Norm? Lids get a Norm Smith?
Yeah, I mean, Dusty had 21, and he's playing his first year. Like, you'd already be off the charts excited about Dusty.
Yeah. And he's breaking tackles.
Yeah, and look, we'll talk about the rucks in a sec. You would have assumed that we all would have had to recruit a ruck because Angus Graham was already too old to. Well, you're not going to.
Angus Graham was only, I think he's 22, so it's feasible. But yeah, so you'd be saying, oh yeah, so Shane Edwards who, along with nine other players, I think, has
33 now.
Has it? Eight. Along with eight other players, has a career high in tackles in this game is pretty crazy. And he's in the midst of first of possibly four different breakout seasons that he has in his career, 2010, 2012, 2017 and 2019. Like every one of those years, he has a noticeable increase in production, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, he doesn't.
You go.
Oh, just saying, he doesn't stand out in this game, but as you say, the 11 tackles is an indicator of And his junior, he always tested out as having elite endurance, yet weirdly that never translated into high possession counts, and, you know, frankly, never has, but except maybe last year. But, already the 11 tackles. You don't get 11 tackles in an AFL game unless you're working pretty hard.
Mm. So you're talking to 2010 you. There's ten Richmond premiership players who aren't juniors at this point in time. So 2010, they wouldn't be surprised about the five that we've talked about, like Dusty, Cochin, Rewalt, Asprey would be a mild surprise, but and Shane Edwards. I think the other five would take you by surprise. So you'd say, you know, the Coburg's centre half forward. So we've got two 18-year-olds playing centre half back and centre half forward, respectively. Well, the 21-year-old playing centre half forward for Coburg, Alex Rance, he's going to be talked about as possibly one of the best defenders of all time. Then 2010 U is going to look pretty quizzical at that one.
Yes, let's set the table here. This is Alex Rance, who's failing to beat out Graham Pollack, Luke McGaughan, and Benjamin Griffiths for a spot in the team.
Yeah, yeah. We're not just looking at the Coburg team. We're looking at the Coburg reserves team. They've got a guy in their back pocket called Dylan Grimes. And trust me, he's going to be All-Australian Monday.
We might have believed that, because remember, there was a lot of excitement about Dylan. He was coming back from injury in that game, wasn't he?
No. This is in his first year. He played the whole first half of the year in the reserves.
Oh, did he? Yeah, wow. Because, you know, he couldn't get a touch.
He'd gone undrafted. We picked him up in the preseason draft, where he's famous for being Jack Grimes's brother, who was a first-round draft pick. And yeah, he spends the whole... He's in the Coburg reserves, along with the other Richmond listed players in the Coburg reserves: Elroy Gilligan, Robert Hicks, Pat Compton, and Nick Westhoff. And Relton Roberts, who's gone from a surprise round one debut to VFL reserves in 2.5 months.
By the way, maybe to help people understand, there was a rule in those days that you could only play 11 listed players in the VFL ones, which is why we had so many players in the VFL seconds. But if you're playing VFL seconds, you're still not the best 11 players of the VFL team, of the Richmond listed players.
No, so we'd picked... Jamie O'Reilly, who was our Irish import, in his first season of AFL football, he was in the Coburg seniors ahead of Dylan Grimes.
I do remember there was a bit of a hype about Dylan on the message boards, but I guess that's a fairly niche audience.
Yeah. So there's, you know, not just the Coburg reserves. Essendon are on their way to... finished third last for the year. Sheedy's last year. Things are well off the rails. And as bad as they are, Bashahuli only plays 4 games for them for the whole season. And he's in his fourth year. So, you know, guys, that's normally a precursor to being delisted. Round 10. Sean Grigg has yet to play a senior game for a distinctly average Carlton team. And I don't know if it's best of all, Kane Lambert's not even playing football. He's not got drafted the year before and has taken a year off to decide whether or not he likes playing football. And it's 4 years from being drafted. Right.
That's great.
Yeah. 2010 U is just thrilled beyond words, but still really surprised.
Let's be clear, Nick. 2010 me was dreaming of the glory of just winning a final. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah. And 2017 you was pretty emotional when it happened.
Yes. Now, Nick, we've gone a little way. And yeah, so there's this little known player called Ben Cousins who has 20 possessions for the game. And he's really interesting to watch because he's shot. So, you know, early on the pace of the game's too much for him. But he just... And you sort of see the echo of why he was such a compelling player in his prime. He just wills his way into the game. And as the game goes on, he becomes more and more important because he knows how the game works and he's just determined to be part of it. It's quite typical of what Ben Cousins Richmond was, and you could see why the other players learnt from having him around.
Mm. Yeah, there were stories about his, you know, his personal life was falling apart, or even at this stage,
had continued to do so.
Had continued to fall apart. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But he worked so hard on the track, and players from that era still talk about that example he set on the track, on the training track. So yeah, you do. I mean, you wonder about the value of recruiting him for a mediocre team for going nowhere. But yeah, I don't know. I'd mixed feelings. I'd completely forgotten that, you know, this was such a tumultuous year, and I think we've got plans to do another game from this late year It's quite a Dan Connors game. You know, and I had a look at his stats from this year, and he was really good, and I was wondering, oh, why isn't he playing in this game? And I'd completely forgotten that. So after we'd lost in round three, Dean Polo, Luke McGowan, Dan Connors and Ben Cousins went back to the hotel in Sydney and had a drinking session that ended up with Dan Connors being so out of control that Ben Cousins had to punch him out to settle him down. And Cousins wasn't particularly blamed for punching him. It was seen as, you know, necessary to restrain him such that those guys all got suspended for 1 week, while Dan Connors got suspended for 8. That wasn't even the biggest story from 2010. I mean, it tells you how crazy things were.
Yeah, I've met a few people who know current Dan Connors, and apparently he's, you know, he's a bit of a character, but, you know, he's quite a functional human being these days. But there was clearly, he was drafted late. He was considered a first-round talent that we got later because he was considered a difficult personality. And, you know, it was very telling that no one took a shot on him after we delisted him because, you know, there was part of the reason, you know, no bones about it, part of the reason he got delisted was to get him away from Dusty. Dusty was the future of the club and they wanted to surround him with better influences. But, yeah, always an intriguing talent. And I do remember that first... the Carlton round one game, a few times Dan Connors did things and kicked really intelligent footballers, really intelligent kicks. And he plays an important role later in the year. So, yeah, mercurial talent. Another fascinating player in this game is Andrew Collins.
Yes.
With 14 touches, 12 tackles, just a few weeks away from his heroics versus Sydney.
Which we're going to do.
Yes, so we won't discuss it further. But interesting player. Like you would have thought, if you thought that in 7 years' time we were going to win a premiership, it wouldn't have shocked you that he was playing. If he'd been playing a sort of Nick Del Santo role for the Richmond premiership team.
Yeah, absolutely. Or sort of a Mark Mercurio for a half-forward flank type thing. Yeah, he was really good the year before. Averaged nearly 20 disposals a game, kicked a goal a game. This year, 2010, he's okay, but he's at age 20. He was a genuinely good AFL footballer. And yeah, at the end of the year, he gets traded for Sean Grigg. Like, yeah, talk about sliding doors.
Absolutely. So another we alluded to before is that we're playing three small forwards in this game: Nahas, Mason, and Tambling. And the one I really want to talk about is Nahas, because he's the most interesting one. He had talent,
he did. Yeah, he had a really good 2009 as well in the midst of a chaotic season.
Yeah, and had he, I think, is the only player. I'm still in, and listeners, feel free to suggest that he's the only player who I can think of who played better for another coach other than Dimmer. In Dimmer's 10-year reign, could he have changed his game to be a pressure forward? Like, he had the offensive skills. He's probably a better attacker than he probably Castagna, slightly different style of player, but as a pure nifty forward pocket, he had an awful lot of tricks. He was a very clever footballer. If a coach had been able to bring out his defensive side better, could he have played in the modern team? And I think I don't know. It's an open question. He's not the endurance athlete that our current smalls are, but he has a lot of tricks.
Yeah, he's certainly talented. I think Ben Nathan was a funny one because he's got a huge tank, but he's skinny and frail. But he covers a lot of ground, and I do. That the model of us, you know, fast breaking from defence with, little guys running in waves down the field, that looks really good. And yeah, you could ask the question why it took so long for us to invest in some decent small forwards.
Yeah, like this question would Ben Nason was probably before his time on the list. Would he have been a better player than Jack Hartz? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he could he have been Liam Baker? Don't know.
Yeah.
So I said there was one more player I wanted to ask you if they fit into this team, and Mitch Farmer is not that player.
Yeah, I think. Don't want to kick them too much, but Mitch Farmer and Jerome Weberly, for different reasons, yeah, they look like players on teams that aren't going to make the finals.
Yeah, too small, not skilled enough, can't win their own ball in Jerome Weberly's case. Mitch Farmer does a couple of really incredibly brave things, and you know he's reasonably quick running in a straight line and kicking the ball long. But he just loses his man at key moments and concedes goals we can't afford. And yeah, he has 30 goals kicked on him for the season, which is quite a lot for a small defender. I think he's a guy that gets you beat.
Yeah, and he's likable, and you know, you can see in training the coaches go, oh, well, you know, he's a nice long kick, and, you know, that'll be good for our distribution out of the back line, because, you know, there are, this is a back line with quite a few butchers in it. Luke, bless his soul. we'll talk about him in a second, but, you know, basically, if you're looking from transition from defence, it's really only Chris Newman who you want to hand pass the ball to. So Mitch Farmer makes sense, but it's sort of like it's no good being able to kick in a vacuum if you can't get free. You know, you need to be fast enough and agile enough to get some space to be able to kick, and you can just see the times Mitch Farmer's actually going to be able to use his lovely long boot are going to be pretty limited in the game. And just on Weberly, he didn't have great awareness for an outside player. Like, he didn't always make great decisions with the ball, which you notice even in this game where it's not, decision making's not that hard. So yeah, I mean, full respect to them, they played more games with AFL footy than we did, but yeah, you can see we're trying a few different players. Now I do want to talk about Luke Nick, because he had a very Luke game as well.
My god, and nearly explodes his testicles on a goalpost, which,
exactly.
Which is quite the sentence.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the key moment is in the first quarter he just gives everything and completely sacrifices his ball to try to rush through a ball for a point, and he's just been poleaxed by he's self-impaled on a goalpost, and he gets up and within 30 seconds he knocks out a Port Adelaide player in a marking contest, and he's still recovering from the previous knock. He was just such a crazy brave player, and like even he had six touches and you know wasn't hugely influential in the game, but like, you just, how could you not love Luke McGuatnick?
Yeah, just palpable sense of effort and doing anything for the team. And look, he ended up with Brisbane. Like he was in the AFL for nearly 10 years, and that was probably twice as long as his pure talent level deserved, but yeah, just heart.
Yeah, I reckon people when they imagine how they'd play as an AFL player, like, you know, everyone who says, you know, you go down to the London before a game, and everyone in their prime would have just said, oh, I would have played here, given anything to just play one rich game in the yellow and black. I think they imagine they'd be as brave as Luke McGuan, well, we all do, that you probably played more like Jerome Weberly. when you're tired, and those really big bodies are starting to smack into each other, and you realise how hard the game is. But yeah, Luke McGuan, if I wish I played football as hard as Luke McGuan does.
Yeah. Someone who I do think could play in this, in the current team is Kel Moore. I was quite impressed with him, and yeah, I was even more impressed when I went and looked up his stats. Like, yeah, he was a very solid footballer.
He was, and a good decision maker too. sort of, I don't know, precursor a bit to, he played against bigger guys, but...
He played on some smaller dudes.
Do you know where I was going with this?
No, but why don't you go?
I was going saucehead to saucehead comparison.
Oh, nice.
So, a little bit Vossy. We've talked a long time, Nick. And we haven't mentioned the crucial fact that we won the hitouts this day.
Yes, true. What was the Angus Graham experience like for you?
So, watching Angus Graham and Jackson Trengrove go head-to-head, and it was sort of like not so much two ruckman contesting, it was more like two really jacked male models having a wrestling competition.
Angus Graham is so jacked. Actually, I have in my notes, is he too jacked?
He's a big... And it really suited his style of game that day, because you weren't ruckman, weren't going to do anything with the ball. It was all about wrestling, tapping, getting the ball forward, and tackling, all of the things that he was actually pretty good at.
One of the players with the career high in tackles this day.
Yeah, yeah. And
12 or something. Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on, I'm just looking up 14. Don't tell him. 14 tackles, 34 hit-outs, and 6 disposals.
Which I'm pretty certain him and Tuck are both in the list of top 20 players, most tackles in a game all time.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, he's hard working.
From this game. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and he makes the second goal, which, and every goal is precious, and basically the game's won in the first quarter, where we win the first quarter, even though it's a 3-goal win the other way, and so it's probably a 4-5-goal lead at quarter time, and, you know, low-scoring wet game, that pretty much wins the game. And the second tap is really big, strong tap from Graham, bit of tucky, and then a goal. You know, his body is important on this day. He's definitely part of the solution. And, you know, I sort of wonder, when he looks back on his career, is this his favourite game? Because, the game, I mean, they would have been bruised, but it does look like awesome fun to play.
I think it was awesome fun to win.
Yeah, but you know, 10 games like that, that's a lot of tension letting go right there, Nick. You know,
yeah, I know. That would have been... Look, it played to his strengths because overhead marking was so hard, so it sort of brought everyone else down to his level. I'd remembered he wasn't a great kick, but even so, I had a little wince of pain when I actually saw his kicking motion.
Yeah. Anyway, it's it was nice to enjoy a good Angus Graham game, because, you know, I think it is sort of slightly forgotten that he did do some hard work for us over the years. Wasn't always, and born into Richmond because fans from Punt Road End, including ourselves, sponsored an extra rookie list pick.
Oh no, good times.
Yeah, so that was our reward, Nick. That was the money we spent on that, was we got this game, which, you know, in the history of our Richmond supporting, this was not an unneeded morale boost.
Speaking of morale boost, it was very noticeable in any time one of our elite young players got the ball. Like, I'd forgotten what Rolls Royce young Trent Cotchin looked like. Like, he occasionally gets bodied off the ball, which current day Trent Cotchin never does, but yeah, he looks classy.
Yeah, he does. Like, it's the start of the Trent Cotchin arc. He's on his way up to win a Brownlow, and at this stage, he's very much the hunted, because, you know, Port Adelaide, when they were scouting this game, they would have said, Shane Tuck, let him get his touches. We couldn't stop him if we tried, and he doesn't use it that well. But they would have circled Cotchin and Delulio and said, stop them. They're the ones who use the ball to hurt you. Because Dusty wasn't, like, to your point before about Dusty, Dusty had 11 clearances in this game. Like, he was playing the inside role. He was not getting out. And, you know, fair enough, he was doing it well. He was not the creator in this game, as you said before. It's Lids and Cotchin are the ones that you worry about on this team.
Yeah.
And we should, by the way, mention that in the last the last echoes of the 2004 draft. This was, you know, one of the last times that there was more than one player on that draft playing together, and you know, if there was any doubt about the sort of Tambo had 12 touches and Lids had 29 about who was the better pick in that draft.
I know. It's easy to forget how good he was. He was a very good player, Brett Delidio.
Yeah, and I bet a lot of people would say, oh, if you just think about that game, oh, you know, a lot of people who don't like Lids, who aren't that many, but, you know, would say, oh, softy like Lids, he wouldn't have been good in that day. He likes it dry and easy. Nope. He was probably should have got three Brownlow votes if the umpires had been.
Of the non-Shane Tuck players.
It actually went to Chris Newman, which may be a bit of a sort of. I was thinking about this after, because he was captaining that day, whether it was a bit of a. Like, he was good, Newman, and he did a lot of good goalkeeping, but I wondered a bit whether the umpire thought, gee, that was a good team effort, and the whole team just seemed so motivated, and there was a bit of a. Newman got three votes as a mark of respect for the way he captained that day.
Hmm. Yeah, possibly so. Brett Delidio, I mean, just so I, you know, in with all the quarantine spare time, I actually listened to our end of season 2016 podcast.
Oh, a classic.
This week. Yes, a classic, and you actually said that, you know, we were quite. You know, we were very happy with the draft picks that we got for Brett Delidio. And you said the line, and I'm really glad that he gets to win the chance to win a premiership with GWA.
Yes. Well, you know, at least I was being magnanimous.
Yeah.
I'd rather be nice about I'd rather be wrong about a nice call than a non-nice call.
Yeah. He was a very good player. He wasn't a great player, but he was a very good player, and yeah, I mean, his Richmond career will always have a certain amount of sadness attached to it because of timing, and seeing him in the stands with the other GWS players on grand final day. Yeah, it's poignant.
But, you know, it's also the butterfly effect, and he was a really strong personality. Maybe if he was still there, and when we had to go to a one forward set up, they would have put him as a second forward, and the pressure forward, you know, the sort of Jack in the Land of the Midgets forward line would never have happened. We wouldn't have second rucked Grigg. You know, there's all sorts of things that might not have happened. And he's a different personality, might have affected the emergence of other leaders. You can't. There's no guarantee we win 2017 if Lids is there. Not that
no.
On paper, where every team is better with Lids, of course, but there's no guarantee. It is what it is.
Mm. That was all I had. Anyone else?
No, it was just, and I think we just need to mention here that you know it's an all-time great song rendition.
Oh, absolutely. And there's you mentioned about the five. Players from the national draft. Yeah, so there's a large clump of players standing in the middle because they'd never played in a win before.
Yes, and some of them don't play in that many wins for the rest of their career.
No, they don't. I miss nothing about being a rebuilding team, except that how hard players celebrate these, you know. Otherwise, inconsequential wins.
No, like, you know, it's just the... actually, I'm just looking. Jerome Webley played in at least 7 or 8 more wins. So, there you go. Sorry, not Webley. Ben Nason. It's nice to remember those days. And, you know, there is sort of, in some ways, an innocence to the big win. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun to go back. And we're looking forward to doing it with some more games.
I know. So next week we've got it's 2008 versus Brisbane, and it's up on YouTube if people want to watch along for some late career Joel Bowden and Matthew Richardson, which I'm really looking forward to it because, you know, the world has gone completely crazy and a little bit of football is just what I need right now.
Well said.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal, one of the Tigers. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks.
Oh, gee whiz.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That's a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.